Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. I've just flown in. I am kissing the ground of the mothership of KPFA in reciprocal blessing. It is a daunting time, really, to address the world going, whoa. And then we remember, in the rousing words of Dante, you know, sing to me, O muse, and through me tell the story. And that's really for everyone and wonderful guest I will be bringing in some moments till we go invite in. You know, how do we weave everything together? So tonight, you know, I will be at Open Secret in, you know, I'm calling it precedes ah. We can all say that together. Precedes ah. Speak to the weary, a word that will rouse them, says Isaiah. And it's the beauty is stronger and definitely woofier than tyranny birthday tour. And also, as Stormy Daniels tweeted to Trumpelstiltskin, game on, Tiny. And we go, all right. So we go, tyranny be compensatory. We need them. We want the confluencing of all allies. So tonight at Open Secret at 7:30 p.m., reservations are much less expensive. You can find that at coyotenetworknews.com. And it is the astro mytho political talk ritual sort of hangout backstage. And then Bioneers is Friday night at 9 p.m., Marin Center, Exhibition Hall, San Rafael, free to everyone, with fantastic flowers being provided by Mud Baron, and people are invited to contribute that also if you have them there by 5 p.m. to dress the stage. And fantastic musicians, Sonia Draculich, Voice and Framedom, and Brianna DiMara of Stella Mara, providing music whereby to call in power and send out blessing. We say music and metaphor are the incarnational garb whereby power enters the world, and on Friday night we aspire to wed them together. So, more than perfectly, everything is tied together, and it is interesting that Trump said, well, Mohammed bin Salman is no more guilty than Brett Kavanaugh, and we go, exactly. It's all about the suppression of the voice, the suppression of the voice. So, we are hosting... That's right, and I'm going to say the name imperfectly, and then invite our guest to say it correctly because it's a beautiful name, Rahman Hussein Wangozi.
Yes,
close enough.
That's right on.
Oh yeah. Well, but you say it because it's even more beautiful.
Rahman Hassan Wangozi. That's actually
Hussein.
That's not my full name.
Oh, okay, go for it.
Yes. My full name, a gift from my father, is Rahman Hassan Al-Sufi Abdullah Wangozi.
Wow.
Yeah.
Al-Sufi, eh?
Al-Sufi.
So you carry the mystical tradition of Islam?
Somewhere. It's definitely been
but,
a
but
been
also,
an
you know, we love, you know, and Hassan means beloved of God, right?
Handsome. Beloved of God.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, handsome and beloved of God. Okay, there you go. So in our first half, we are hosting Rahman Hussein Wangozi.
Please just call me Rock.
Okay, and Rock, that's right. And you can follow him on Twitter at Rock.
At The Rocks World, that's R-O-C, T-H-E-R-O-C-S-W-O-R-L-D.
That's great, because you have many worthy things to spiral out there. And we love positive yang that's been to the underworld and come back with a backpack full of what gets us through, right? So Rahman Rock is
Please,
the author of Inner Demons, Blazing a Path Towards Happiness. Yes, we love demons, and how he continues to leverage his inner demons to attain success. And well, from hardscrabble Oakland to financial big time in corporate world, which is, it paused me, but we're going to have a good time playing with that. And the adventure be ongoing, clearly.
Yes.
And then in the second half of the hour, we pass the baton to Starhawk, who will be joining us, renowned activist animist partnering with the Earth. Also quite an expert herself at dancing with demons as dark incentives to liberating democratic animism, teasing all into pertinence to now. So there we have it. Welcome, Rock.
Thank you.
So that's great. There's so many places to go, but I love, and also I just want to do a shout out to your agent, Lula. Can you say her name correctly?
Yes, Lula Kazum.
Lila Kazum, who is appropriately indefatigable.
She is awesome.
So, she's awesome.
Yes.
Hi there, Lula. Because we're all backstage playing here. Because I had a pause button when she said, this is a young man who overcame much and achieved financial success at Enron and AT&T and Pfizer. I'm like, oh, I don't know. That's a hard sell.
Some of the biggest corporations.
Yes, right.
anywhere.
Right. And I thought, okay, the grumpy progressive left, what are they going to deal with that? And then she passed it on to you and came back with this great thing that I want to toss to you.
Sure.
That, you know, here's Rock's thoughts, she said, which is why she's so good.
Yes.
There's a significant difference between being a black man making it to the top of corporate America and being a white man doing the same, considering the corporations are where the socioeconomic power lies and that black men are overwhelmingly in servitude to that very system. Yeah, we want to talk about, you know, gagging. It's the Kavanaugh thing. It's the Bin Salman thing. It's, you know, you've gained your voice. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I think that's completely great. So wherever you want to dive in, but there is this pivotal moment where you're in the Enron interview room and daunted by the privilege surrounding you of all the people who've been to Harvard and stuff, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and then you...
Yeah, I'll tell this story.
Only if you want to.
No, it's a great
story.
No, it's a great story. I went to Morehouse College in Atlanta, and I met the Enron recruiters. We hit it off, and they flew me to Houston for a weekend of interviews. And so there was a happy hour, sort of a cocktail hour before we went to dinner. And I'm standing there interacting with, you know, my peers, other potential recruits to the company, and we all have name tags. And under our names, there are the schools that we went to. There was Harvard, there was McGill out of Canada, University of Texas. A lot of very big name schools, very prominent schools. And I had a moment of self-doubt, because here I am coming from Morehouse. It's a very small school. You know, I'm a black man coming from Oakland, California, single mother household. And I felt nervous and I felt a bit intimidated by just the cachet of all the names and everything that everyone else was bringing. And I sat with that for a little bit. A large part of me wanted to leave, but I couldn't go anywhere. And I just thought about this over and over. And I thought about the journey that I had, you know, traversed to get there. And as I thought about the things I had overcome just to get to that moment, I was no longer nervous. And I no longer felt that I was against, you know, these huge odds. I actually felt empowered because I knew that the road that I had traveled was difficult. I had made a lot of sacrifices. I invested so much and I had overcome so much. So me standing in that room was a triumph. And at that point, my mentality, my feelings about the situation switched. I was no longer intimidated by the competition. I'm like, I'm the competition. They have to worry about me. I have so much drive, you know, propelling me away from a lot of the different things that I witnessed and experienced here in Oakland. The fact that I'm being interviewed by this at that point, it was like the 34th largest company in the country. I'm like, I'm in bonus time. I'm winning here.
Right. Well, yeah, it is a great moment, and you have a piece on Twitter, a little 3-minute piece about it too.
Yes.
And just to reiterate what, you know, I was the kid that had overcome the pitfalls of society by standing in this room. I dodged the bullets, figuratively and literally, right? Because you almost mm-hmm. went to prison and your mom was great. And, I mean, many, many things.
There are
right?
a lot of different
stories
things.
Stories could have gone lots of different ways.
The story could have gone a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
And before even getting to college, beforehand, I really wanted to just focus on childhood, because there were a lot of people were trying to be helpful, but we hear these things of, at the time, this was the 80s and in the early 90s, of the odds and the statistics of young black men have, you know, this amount of this likelihood of going to prison or not graduating, you know, high school or dying, and all of these very, very negative things. And people meant well, but that created a very just negative environment that you're trying to grow up in, and you're trying to, you know, find inspiration and just a way forward. And there are these things that are, you know, holding you back. So fighting through that, it was challenging. It was challenging.
Yeah. And what we were speaking of, you know, backstage, I love words revealing themselves, that the word privilege means private law.
Mm-hmm.
So you were coming into a room of people of privilege, you know, and transcending that. Here's the demons, right? Inner demons, you know, that every kerfuffle is an incentive to experiment for freedom, right?
Yes, it's you sent me a very beautiful piece by student. I forget his name.
Romeo Keyes.
Romeo Keyes.
Right. Isn't that amazing? Yes,
it was amazing. But the most amazing part about it were the parallels. His birthday was September 15th. Mine's September 14th.
Ooh.
He was born in 1997.
Right.
I was born in 76. So literally like 21 years.
And I really would like to put you guys together.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Right.
But his story of... His,
the power of myth and dream.
The power of myth and how he got into that and seeing himself in those characters. I mean, it was eerie because that was very much my childhood. I read a lot of stories, and I particularly like sci-fi and fantasy stories. My favorite books ever are The Chronicles of Narnia. Children's stories. And I've read them backwards and forwards dozens of times because I was just very attracted to that hero's journey, the character who's in the middle of the storm and all of these things, instead of happening to them, they're really happening for them. They are tools that they are using to leverage themselves to the most idealized version of themselves, to tap into their higher strength and higher power. You can't do that without adversity. And so as I grew older, I really began to appreciate all of the different things that that I had experienced, whether people consider them good or bad. I even stopped thinking about it in terms of good or bad. They just were. And it was up to me to craft a narrative of whether they were good or bad. And as I internalized those lessons within myself, and you were speaking about privilege and those people in the room, as I began to meet them and know them and understand their stories a little bit more, the whole concept of privilege becomes very murky, right? Because I'm meeting people who had immigration issues and they're coming from Canada. Right. And I'm always thinking, only, you know, Mexicans and brown people have immigration issues. But no, I had a friend from Canada who was very, very concerned with the status of immigration. Never thought of it that way. And people coming from single parent homes and abusive situations. And there's a lot of kinship. Once you leave behind a lot of the boxes and the categories that society and culture wants to put us in, and you really get down to it, people are just doing their best. They're doing the best to survive and make it, because life can be tough.
And I think that's a great part of your narrative: inner demons blazing a path to happiness.
Yes.
Oh, and we should again obey Lula, that you will be book signing at 2 p.m. on October 20th at the Barnes & Noble in Emeryville.
Yes.
And kind of hanging out for discourse and conversation.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Where it's going to be an interview with a very good friend of mine, Rodney Campbell. He has a local company called Dope Only. He's going to be conducting... he's going to be hosting the interview. We'll have a conversation. We'll throw it to the crowd. And I'm open for any question. Just
no, because part of what shines through inner demons blazing a path to happiness is your, I love saying, you know, what qualities do we really want to honor and appreciate in men? And you earned, many things, you know, but strong enough to be gentle. You narrate about going, and I moved to the suburbs because my girlfriend wanted to and it was boring, but we made white middle-class family friends and I really liked them. You know, you get to see the whole thing and you're kind.
I've learned to be.
You've learned to be. Exactly.
To be
no, that's
and
right.
That's,
and it doesn't mean just kind. I mean, you get to be, and everything too, but the kindness, the earned kindness shines through your work, don't you think?
I think so. And, you know, any kindness that people see from me is really a reflection of the kindness and the grace that others have extended to me. There's a story, very pivotal to my life. It didn't make the book, unfortunately, but...
there'll be others.
Yes.
Yeah.
But my babysitter, Mrs. Nelson, my mother, I was, I don't know, maybe 2 years old. And my mother had a job interview, at the time, AT&T, what became Pacific Bell, which circled back to AT&T again. Young mother, 25 years old. She's trying to find a job to feed me. And, there was no room at the inn. Right? There was no room at the daycare. And my mother, was in tears because she's looking for, you know, she's has a very good job on the line. And this woman sees my mother, this young mother, and decides to extend us just a little bit of grace and said, okay, I'll watch your son for a couple of hours. We'll figure something out. And I ended up staying with that, you know, with that woman, for a couple of years, you know, every day babysitting while my mother, you know, went to work. And that story is pivotal. I believe it's pivotal to how my life turned out. And it's a woman who, you know, grew up in, you know, excuse me, I don't know where she grew up, but who lived in East Oakland, not the the best neighborhood, but she gave all that she could. It may have been a little for someone else, but she gave what she could. And that extension of grace just opened up so many opportunities for me. And I remember those stories and I'm humbled by those stories. And I believe it's my responsibility to extend that and pay that forward.
That's great. Yeah, right. Because I do have your chart. I will not impose things on you,
but I do
love it. You are Virgo, which is, you know, the old language says ruled by Mercury, but really what it means is incarnation of Mercury, Hermes, power of language and craft. And you, as you know, medicine man, which is what your father might have had in mind. You know, what is Rahman again?
Rahman, it means the most compassionate.
That's great, right? It takes a while. That's right, Rahman. You know, there's a lot. The beauty of Arabic there.
Yes.
Is your father okay? Mr. Mwangozi.
Mwangozi.
From where?
He's from here.
So where's the name Mwangozi?
So it's funny. It was maybe this time last year. I had my father on my podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never known the story of how I got my name, how he came into Islam, and so we had this very long conversation. And it was live. This was the first time that I was hearing these stories. And he had a mentor who. Because my father, a little bit of context, my father grew up here in Oakland, and so in the 60s and the early 70s, as, you know, the Black Power movement and a lot of the, you know, what they called the counterculture, as that was going on, he was a young man, a young teenager in the epicenter of that, and he found a mentor who expanded his concepts of spirituality and community and those various relationships, and he chose this name. Mwangozi, which means leader in Swahili.
Uh-huh.
And he chose that name. He chose for me, this very long, complex name. And,
let's say it one more, Rahman.
Rahman Hassan Al-Sufi Abdullah Mwangozi.
Okay. That's good.
Side note, this is kind of funny. I think there are only 6 letters in the alphabet that I don't use in my name.
Very nice. So in Scrabble, you could win big.
I can win big. But yeah, my name is actually, when I was younger, you know, again, growing up here in Oakland, young man, trying to be tough, trying to, you know, run with the guys. I didn't like the implications of the name Rahman, the most compassionate.
Right.
It sounded soft.
Too weak.
It sounded weak.
Yeah.
Especially in that time. And through living and having, you know, grace extended to me, I realized that compassion is the ultimate strength. Compassion is, it's a gift that one gives when they are so strong within themselves.
Yeah.
And being vulnerable and being open to whatever may, you know, may be presented.
No, that's great. Because it is, as you have embodied, you know, and we want a reciprocal blessing, you know, wish you well and you wish the world well. But it is that strong enough to be gentle. And it's like I love New Orleans and they really keep it open. And the last time I was there is where the musicians start the second line parade by coming out of the funeral homes.
Mm-hmm.
And they are these, you know, large 6'4" Black guys, and they're great musicians, and they're wearing t-shirts and hats that said, "We heart haters."
Hmm.
We love haters.
Mm-hmm.
And it only works because it's because of what you've been through and what they've been through, which is, I could kill you.
Yes.
It's a freedom.
Yes.
And I'm choosing not to, as opposed to I'm just a weak person and I'm defaulting that way in a kind of new age wimpy way. But yeah, it's like, it's like peace. Very strong.
Yeah.
So that's great. And, so in the reciprocal blessing realm, you know, again, what I was just sort of pointing out in your chart, your moon is exalted in Taurus, which is strong enough to be gentle, but you earned it through. Yeah. And in the book, you know, you narrate and sometimes narrate in a way in which the reader is distanced from you going, yeah, he knocked on his girlfriend's door at 3 a.m. and was mad that she was grumpy. It's like, we're with her. You know, anyway.
Yeah, that was on purpose because I know sometimes when people, you know, write books like this, they want to paint the glossiest picture of themselves and their lives.
Right.
And I thought that that was false. Not for them, they have their reasons, but for me, that would have been false, because I think the reason why I've gotten here is because I sort of embraced the darkness that I found within myself. A lot of anger, a lot of sort of a hyper competitive spirit. And, you know, people think these things are negative, but they allow me. I mean, this world is brutal. This world is very unforgiving. And those quote unquote negative things are the very tools that I use to make it through. And not all the decisions were the best decisions, and not all the outcomes were the best outcomes. But that process of losing and getting knocked down and picking myself up again and taking the next step forward, I felt that that was important. And I wanted the reader in some parts of the story
to distance,
to absolutely to go, not I, like me, because yeah. some I don't like some of the actions that I, you know, that I did, or some of the ways that, you know, that I was, but it was part of a journey.
Well, you know, just to honor that, you know, you know, Pluto, death, rebirth, journey through the underworld, you know, as though part of you, you know, as a metaphor before birth, said, land me in circumstances where I will learn a lot about what needs healing in the world.
Yes.
About families and relationships and black and white and money. And they go, we have an opening in, well, Portland, into Oakland. There, here you go. It's perfect. And,
yes.
You know, and what I was saying backstage, you know, you have Mercury in Libra, and a capacity to see many things, you know, Pluto, intensity, right next to Mars, intense volatility, right next to Venus, beautiful art. And we go, right, crafting that intensity into art, that's kind of what you're doing.
Yes.
Because it is like rocket fuel. And it is, if you have a mission, and I'll toss it back to you in 2 seconds here, if you have a mission, it's indomitable. And if you don't, if you fall into other people's games, it's volatile.
Yes.
And you could really surprise people, as you delineate, by just kind of going off.
Yes.
Because I was like, whoa. And see, there's no morality to the chart. It's not bad, not good. We go, underused fuel.
Yes.
So this mission thing.
Yeah. And I think what that point that you touched on is that it's just a lot of energy. It's not good. It's not bad. It just is. Controlled explosions. I mean, we're all driving cars. That is a controlled explosion. You know, the rocket ships and all of these different things. And that is one of the that's why I called it Inner Demons, Blazing the Path to Happiness. Because we have these things. We have this anger, we have this animosity, we have this discontent, and a lot of people allow that to consume them and tear them down, when those are how we're feeling about the world. They're clues of where work needs to be done. If you're unhappy and angry about your circumstances, that's a good thing. If they're bad circumstances, you should be angry about that. You should feel incensed by the injustice that you see happening to you, the injustice that you see happening to other people. So that, you know, righteous anger is a good thing. And, you know, too often we're told to, we should smile.
No.
We should be happy.
No, because that's slave laughter. That's slave laughter. That's
yeah,
really scary.
Yeah.
Right. But it's, I guess it's that quality. I mean, you love freedom and guiding other people to freedom, and that's, it keeps going in many ways. But yeah, and you're Cancer rising. A friend of mine jokes, Cancer's just a Scorpio in a housecoat, meaning, you know, a friend of mine says that you have in your backpack to be used as part of your palette, but he goes, does my staring bother you? Right? So, I mean, because you could be intense. There's a kindness gleaming behind your eyes, but it's earned. It's earned. And you could have, don't mess with me, right?
I mean, yes. That is a very large part of my personality. I do
which
find
one?
Myself.
Don't mess with me.
Yes, don't mess with me.
Right.
Yes.
Survival.
It is a survival mechanism, and I'm much more aware of that these days than, let's say, when I was younger. I mean, when I was younger.
Possessed by it, you mean?
Yes. I mean, and I have, you know, a lot of friends who, you know, grew up with me, you know, elementary, middle school, high school. I'm sure they have plenty of stories of some of the...
run, he's going to blow, it's Volcano Man.
Right. Yeah. But again, just living and having, you know, some of these, you know, these experiences, and what I found is... It's not, that energy is not for everyone. I'm very kind to people who need it. And it's not something physical, right? I can feel other people's energy, and I try to reflect and I try to mirror that. So when people are unkind and a bully, they find themselves in a very uncomfortable situation because I tend to mirror that. As an example of what you don't want to be, always offering the off ramp of, but we can go over here and can be peaceful and we can commune together. Yeah, the invitation is always there.
Well, could we say it's a little bit like Aikido, you know, the spiral out of polarity?
Yes.
And I keep aspiring to return to classes, but I love the philosophy.
Yes.
But I love it when, you know, you take it and to the aggressor you go, don't do that, you'll hurt yourself.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That it's, yeah, so you're smiling and you know
because
this spiral.
Yeah, I actually studied Aikido for a couple of years.
Excellent.
Tom Gamble.
Oh, I admire that.
Yeah, he's off of Park Avenue here in Oakland. I don't know if the dojo is still there, but it's funny. I had always seen it when I was a kid, and when I became an adult and it was still there, I'm like, I'm going to do that. And so, yeah, that philosophy is very important to me.
Yeah, no, that's great. Well, because that's what I'm sort of speaking tonight and encouraging and inviting it in, you know, and everything, which is for all of us, it's a volatile, dangerous, scary world now, increasingly, to be agents of cool response as opposed to hot reactivity, which is part of your journey, right?
Yes, and this book, even though it's filled with details of my life, this story that I wanted to share, this is everyone's story. We all have adversity, and we all have self-doubt, and we all have these things that we are sort of presented with in terms of our character, our innate character that we were born with, the environments that we grew up in. And I wanted to, the things that I wanted to highlight in my story were things that really spoke to, I would say, a more expanded view of the Black experience. Too often the Black experience is degradation, poverty, and a lot of corruption in terms of drugs and violence. And those are the stories that are, they're widely available. Let's just leave it at that. And when you hear of particularly young Black men overcoming those circumstances, it's usually through some type of extraordinary skill, whether it's athletic or artistic, and they go on to, you know, fill up the, you know, the pop charts or the box scores for, you know, whatever, you know, sporting event. But what I wanted to talk about were regular people, the regular average Black experience that is not, that doesn't get a lot of shine in the media, whereas people are just getting up every day like everyone else, dealing with insecurities, dealing with love, dealing with self-doubt, dealing with triumphs. A more well-rounded, you know, like I said, just a more well-rounded narrative of what that is. And as we spiral out from there, people will see that, no, it's not just the Black experience. Right. There are white families and Hispanic families and Asian families that deal with single parenthood and, again, self-doubt, elements of poverty. And
so,
violence.
Again, in our little waning Christian time, but let's keep it going.
Please go ahead.
And but so what brought you back to Oakland?
What brought me back to Oakland is this is where the story started. And I felt that this was the proper place to start the next chapter of my life in terms of giving back. I've been out in the world. I left home when I was 17. I spent maybe a couple of years here during my adult life, but I've spent my life away. And I feel that as the stories and the myths go, the hero goes out into the world, learns lessons, comes home to share the wisdom that, you know, that has been earned out in the world to enrich the place and the people that nurtured him at the beginning, and then to, again, like, build another chapter.
That's perfect and beautiful. Yeah, and as Lou, your Rock is eager to leverage all his accomplishments to inspire Black youth and other minority to socioeconomically disadvantage to step into their power.
Yes.
And that's a great dedication. And then, you know, in the realm of reciprocal blessing, you know, we have a lot of great dedicated listeners who are undoubtedly resonating with yourself. And, you know, Jupiter is about to oppose your Jupiter. And it just says, yes, absolutely, so many, may there be so many opportunities for you to share your story in a way that is good for everybody and replenishing.
Yeah, like I said, I'm an average person in a lot of ways. I'm 5'9", right? So,
we're just going to wrap up a little bit.
Oh, yeah, so playing basketball wasn't an option, you know, but I have a brain. There are a lot of young kids with brains and have dreams and hopes and this well of creativity. And what I want to encourage them through my stories is to hold on to that creativity. You don't have to, you know, be an athlete. You can just be smart. There are a lot of smart kids with imagination that just need a little bit of encouragement. And those are the things that are going to change their circumstances and by extension, change the world and the environment around them.
Right. And you have so much to offer about what gets us through, what gets us through, what gets us through. And to be a mentor.
Yeah.
Yeah. To have mentors and be a mentor. Well, thank you so much, Rock.
Oh, thank you.
Rahman.
Rahman.
Rahman. Yes. Rahman Hussein. Wangozi.
Wangozi, yes.
Yeah, a pleasure.
Thank you.
Yeah, and may it go well for you. And thank you so much. And let's stay in touch.
Absolutely. And I really appreciate the platform. And again, if you're in the Bay Area, please stop by the Barnes & Nobles in Emeryville this Saturday at 2 p.m. And if you can't, please pick up the book, Inner Demons, Blazing the Path to Happiness. It's on Amazon and Barnes & Nobles and iBook and all the other places where you can buy books.
That's very beautiful. Thank you so much. And we're going to, this is Caroline Casey, Visionary Activist Show. We're going to have a very short break. And when we come back, Starhawk will be joining us from Sebastopol. Thank you, team. Mwah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Oh, get down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Ooh, chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Telegraph my indigo skyship, make its voice long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. That was our great ally. Thank you very much, Rahman Hussein Wangozi. There we go. And now we spiral into the spiral dance, which is so wonderful, as we are welcoming Starhawk, great ally, who is joining us from Sebastopol. Welcome, Starhawk.
Hi, Carolyn. I'm up in the Casadero Hills, where I happen to know all of my neighbors are your biggest fans and are probably listening right now. So
that's
hi, everybody.
Great. Hi, everybody. Yeah. You know, I have an enormous affection for Casadero, so a place of great mythic power. So that's wonderful. So I thought this was perfect. I'm so grateful because we just had the really great Rock. His using inner demons to leverage success into, at first, the financial world that was a grand illusion. We didn't get time to go into why Enron, he saw through that and stuff, and now here we are. But I thought, how perfect then to bring yourself in right now, and we can talk about the spiral dance and the, you know, the dauntingness of addressing the world now, right? Because there's so, and how to weave it into coherence. But where I'll toss it back to you is I was feeling that daunting, going, oh, and then going, no, remember, we're inviting it in. And, you know, the beautiful language to which we're dedicated, it wants to speak through us. So, yeah. So the Spiral Dance, feel free to the 39th Annual Reclaiming Spiral Dance, never more needed. Feel free to invite our dedicated listeners to that.
Yes, well, we are putting on our 39th Anniversary Spiral Dance, October 27th, Saturday night. And it's going to be at the Craneway Conference Center in Richmond, a really beautiful location, right close to where the new ferry terminal will be. And for us, this is a very special time. You know, this is a time of year when we say the veil is thin that divides the worlds, and the ancestors are close, and we can connect to our beloved dead. It's a time for communal grieving and mourning of those who have passed this year, but also a time to ask for help and for guidance. You know, there's an old mystical teaching that the ancestors are all around us and they want to help us. It's their job to help us, but they need to be asked.
Right.
They can't just come in any more than you could just come into my house and start cleaning it up. Much as it might benefit.
Right.
My invitation.
Right. Yeah, no, no, we're so in accord for such a long interweaving time. And that's what I was sort of doing last night, going, oh, to tie everything together. I have not been fond in the past of using the word evil, right? Because I go, okay, it means unripe in Aramaic, and, you know, we want to spiral out of polarity. But there is evil, and we're seeing it. In this realm of possession, and then remembering, going, right, okay, we call in, we're not alone, the invisible, this time of year, Starhawk's work that resonates within everyone, right, we call in the support of the ancestors and the invisible to heal, and that's where it's against all odds is completely plausible. But I also like to say, you know, if... That's why, you know, dedicated acts of beauty invite power into the world. So, yeah, I will be at Open Secret tonight and then Bioneers on Friday, which is free to everybody. And Mud Baron, this wonderful person, is bringing just huge amounts of flowers and inviting people to do that. And we go, right, that calls in, too. And you, for your long dedicated journey, you know, the power of, you know, dedication is an invitation, right? So,
well, I will... You know, I've also never really wanted my theology to embrace the polarities and dualities of good and evil.
Right.
But, boy, it sure is hard to find another word for what's going on right now.
Right. I've never really used it, and I don't really bandy about, you know, the neoliberal hegemony of the patriarchy much, but it's there. And it was a couple Sundays ago that I just felt so full of anger, which is not a default setting of mine. Usually just, it was right before the Kavanaugh thing, and Venus was stationing, about to go to the underworld. And I found that heartening, because it was right when Susan Collins was giving her obedient, horrible speech about supporting Kavanaugh. But at that very moment was Venus in Scorpio stationing, getting ready to go to the underworld. And I felt heartened by Venus in Scorpio going, I got this. The investigation's going to continue. I got this. And I'm like, oh. But then I was so angry at the following Sunday, like, ah, da, da. And then I didn't even, and I was resistant to doing things that it would have been helpful, like, nah, and then slowly, and then something shifted, and it was only later when I looked, oh, Pluto's stationing to go direct. It's dredging up everything and everyone, every, you know, forgotten memory, every racial earth memory of abuse, like, ah, da, da. And then it did change, and then I noticed Pluto stationing. It changed into the alchemy of desire. But back to you. I mean, did you, this dredging up of anger? It's healing if
well,
we cook
I,
it.
I thought I was, the whole time the Kavanaugh thing was happening. I was teaching our Sacred Earth intensive and doing, you know, we were connecting to the earth and learning about herbalism and learning about how to make relationships with the plants and with one another and doing all this healing. And, you know, it was beautiful. And then we were sneaking off at lunch to check our phones and see what the news was saying.
Yeah.
And then one morning I found myself driving down there from my place, hearing one of those Republicans on the radio, and suddenly I was, like, literally driving and screaming, like, God, he's coming without his liver! So,
yeah.
Okay.
Right. Well, it did pull it up.
As Rahman was saying earlier, like, anger can be a really creative force. Anger is life force.
Yeah.
Anger
yeah.
tells us something is going on, we need to do something around. And, you know, in the permaculture world, which I'm also deeply involved in and teach a lot, we understand that natural systems need periods of disturbance in order to activate all the forces of regeneration.
Perfect.
So sometimes we as activists have to be that disturbance. It's one of the ways that we can use and channel that anger, not to not to anger's not a great place to like act out of or make decisions out of or you know, turn around and ruminate and fixate on. But it is can be a creative life force if you use it as fuel for taking creative action and for looking and saying, well, what needs to be knocked down, but what needs to be built up? So
yeah,
the spiral dance this year, you know, for me, it's so powerful to come together in a community of ritual and enact that transformation. Our intention this year is to stir a cauldron of tears and outrage and brew an elixir of radical justice and peace. And, yeah, that's the magical work that I feel like we need to be doing right now, is taking the grief and the sorrow and the loss that we're all feeling on so many levels, and the rage and the anger, and stir it together. And out of that, we need to figure out a way to bring about real justice.
Perfect.
And we can best do that, I believe, by connecting deeply in community, by building real relationships with one another, and finding the ways to support one another and stand in solidarity with each other.
Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Right, because it's
right.
it's the cooking of, you know, it, yeah, exactly, the Mars, the Pluto, the wrathful Dakinis, I like saying, let all, you know, mythic figures, one way of understanding them is as metaphoric animations of intrinsic intelligence in nature, right? So the wrathful Dakinis are what metabolizes poison. So they take the poison of anger, which is, you know, a good arousal thing, and then cook it into wrath, fierce protection of the whole community. So yeah, anger into desire. So it does arise. And what I want to toss back to you is that, you know, the conundrum, the evolutionary conundrum before us all, and the crucial beauty of your work and your dedication, which is the Dementors of Doom. I'm using the metaphor of possession, not to freak ourselves out, but I think it's useful. You know, the memosphere has been filled with, you know, hatred and mob mind, so it behooves us to fill it with the invitations to the best of humans. But the Dementors, bless their hearts in the fullness of time, do horrible things. The separating of children from babies, the carving up of animals, the carving up of humans, that appropriately create anger and outrage. Rah, 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 rah. But unworked anger feeds them. They love that, right? The Dementors love that. So it does require all of us craftily having anger and then cooking it into desire. And it can be witty and fierce desire, you know?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. And also, I would say overworked anger, you know, like in cooking, it's about cooking it just enough. Because if you stew and stew and stew in your anger and resentment, right, then you're never going to get any nourishment out of it. You cook all the good stuff.
Well, it gets very tricky because colonialism is so sneaky and we're all working. It's like, you know, for myself, I go, no, Caroline, do not get grumpy about people being grumpy. Do not get condescending about people being condescending. Do not get judgmental about people who are judgmental. Do not, you know, so it's very sneaky, you know, and we do like, and that's why it's great to have friends, you know, hold us to our standards going, oh, that wasn't, you know, that we love the critique back and forth. But, right, yeah, as Steve Behrman says, you know, then you just get tantrum yoga, you know, and, you know, and relationship based on complaint or whining is really reciprocal infantilization. So it's like we want to throw all these things into the cauldron, you know, and cook them, right? Complaint into action or desire, or I mean, this is where we, you know, everybody gets to play, right?
Yeah. And I always say, as an activist, that we have to so many times stand up and say no to the nasty, brutal stuff that's going on. But our no is always stronger if we know what we're saying yes to.
Definitely.
And if we're acting out of passion for what we love, not just the outrage for what we hate.
Well, I have these two great puppies, new, and it's all related. And with puppies and sort of a dog whisperer kind of a thing, and it teases into politicians. You can't just go no, because it strengthens the resistance. They're like into that. You go, no, no, over here. There you go, over that. No, no, do not chase the cat. No, oh, over there, do that thing. And it is our political dynamic if you just go, no. Which is why let me toss this to you. I don't want to be grumpy about language, you know, or language police, right? But I would like to expand our vocabulary so that it's not just resistance. Because resistance is really kind of against the thing, you know? And I go, okay, so I'm I'd like to expand the thing. But again, it's like, no, over here, the guiding, or not this, but here's desire over here. It's all puppies and politicians and how we dance. So it's like, hey, disrupt. You mentioned disruption and Eris way out in the Kuiper Belt beyond Pluto. Goddess of disruption is part of our team. So what would we like disrupted?
You know, there's one school of dog training too that says, well, rather than correcting the dog and saying no, what you do is you reward the dog every time they make a move toward what you want them to do.
Yeah.
If you say sit and they twitch their backside, you give them a little pat or a little reward. You know, if their backside lowers, you give them a little reward. When they finally sit, you give them a big reward. And I think we could do more of that in the movement too with our politicians.
Yes.
With each other, it's like, you're not perfect. You know?
Right. No, this is really important.
Saying, you've made a move in the right direction.
Right.
You know, great. And now here's another move you could make and another move.
Yes, that's great.
They also say never beat a dog for coming to you.
Right, definitely.
No matter how long you've been staying there screaming and calling and they've been running after a rabbit, and they finally come, you praise them because otherwise they won't come again.
Right, and I think this is so important for our team now as we are dedicating to being agents of cool response in a hot reactive world, is we do want to be inviters not only of the ancestors but of the good in everybody, no matter how befoibled. So we go, all right, Madeleine Albright did some terrible things, but just wrote a good book on tyranny. Over here. Yes, that's
right,
a good part.
Yeah.
You know, whistleblowers, worked for the NSA for 40 years, you know, boo. But now, over here, good. You know, those who've gone to the underworld, you know, and come back.
Yeah, I read a post about people in North Carolina who've been Trump supporters and climate deniers now after, like, the second or third hurricane. You're like, oh, I think there is something to this, and we should be welcoming those people.
Definitely.
Not like, where have you been?
No finger wagging. Right, if our own team, again, because we're all in this dream together, if we could compost into the cauldron, you know, addiction to, you know, finger wagging, disappointment. You know, think of the energy. If it was, it's like a renewable fuel. You know, harumphitude, you know, all those things. So here's, let me pitch this also to you, because so much of what unites the horror is corruption. And so throwing corruption into the cauldron and then we ladle out. So I was thinking, what is the antidote? What does it want to be? And I go, dedication to collective well-being as you know, whatever. And you know, and if you and your team and the Spiral Dance and all who join on October 27th at the Craneway Conference Center in Richmond, you lucky people who live here, doors open at 6, ritual begins at 7, Reclaiming Spiral Dance. Oh, and it does cost money, right? You I don't think you can say how much.
Yeah,
but
all those details are on reclaimingspiraldance.org.
That's great. And yes.
Yeah, we always say no one turned away for lack of funds, but it is a fundraiser for us, so we also have a sliding scale. But yes, you know, for me, part of the reason for doing ritual is because it helps us face together those things which are too much to face alone.
Right.
And the times right now are like that.
They are.
You
right.
know, we need that sense of collective undertaking and that bringing together of our intention and our will, which we do in the Spiral Dance with everybody who's there. The whole, 1,000 people participate in dancing the spiral and weaving the magic together. And that, you know, we have wonderful chorus and dancers and beautiful altars and all of that, but the heart of it is really everyone doing that magical act together and focusing on that vision of the world we want to create and raising energy to send out and help bring that about.
Right. No, because what's such a strong theme, and looking at the chart of the midterm elections, you know, what's rising in the East is, I think it's Mercury and Venus at 27 plus Libra, whose image is a person in deep gloom, unnoticed, a glowing circle of angels surrounds them. And it's like the election is not what's going to happen, it's what are we going to make happen, and what are we going to invite. But the guidance in there is let us not be too alone. And to drown in our gloom, because when we gather, like with Star at the Spiral Dance, and or with me and others at, tonight at Open Secret or at Bioneers or whatever, then we are the glowing circle of angels. But it's not a time to be too alone, because it's spooky in a good way and spooky in a bad way, right? So that's by the communing.
So how's the election looking astrologically?
No, it's so, you know, and again, you know, because I was, when we were speaking also, you know, last night, and I was like, oh, the dauntingness of it all came upon me. And I did, where I got to relieve myself of going, no one person can address all of this. We all need each other. It's like, yes, Starhawk, what a relief. How wonderful to cahoot with you. So it is all, it's quirky, and how do we cooperate with it, and how do we see, but how do we compost our own despair and disappointment, you know? It is rising. We see out there, you know, these themes of, you know, bondage, slavery, civil war, now destruction of the earth, the incredible Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, you know, and her incredible voicing of the memory locked in her hippocampus of the boys laughing at her expense, right? And then Trump doing that, and we go, and then Kavanaugh's being there is his judicial policy now, and this theme of, you know, the gagged voice, and then Jamal Khashoggi, the gagged voice, you know, everywhere, and then the voices and gathering together and encouraging and inviting in safety and support, all of those things. So it's big. And then when you look at the voter suppression of Native Americans in North Dakota and the chicanery and corruption in Georgia. So I think, you know, where you do such beautiful work and where we want to align and it resonates in everyone's heart is, you know, the invisible, the memosphere, is the primary place of influence for the liberating trickster within us all, and to create an atmosphere conducive to the desirable. Whew, you know, that the soul of this country rise up. You know, as you mentioned, the former Trump voters that we want to welcome. Good, welcome. We need everybody. Yeah, and so it's, you know, it's not a fixed future. That's why it's scary.
Yeah, and why it's also exciting, and why I just want to always remind people, you know, we need to, while we're looking for more power than we have, we need to use the power we've got.
Definitely.
So I hope everyone who's listening is registered to vote. If you're not, and you're in California, the deadline is October 22nd, so you still have time. There's a great website called Vote Save America you can go to that can help you check if you're registered, that has all kinds of great suggestions on actions you can take and ways to get involved, and will help follow all the key campaigns that we're... I mean, I'm usually not Miss Electoral Politics. You know me. I'm more like, let's do magical spells and then go out and do street actions.
Right.
Let's just tear up the streets and build the garden. And I'm all for all that, but right now, like, we just got to vote as well.
Yeah, no, voting is magic. And you know, again, you know, just, oh, compost, everyone's like, well, it's not perfect, there's the third party thing. It's like, no, inch by inch, this is all really important. Whatever we add Saturn dedication to is magic by the casting of this ballot. And let's look at the people in Georgia who again, everything corrupt against them, who've been early voting, waiting for 3 hours. Three hours to vote because it's so important. And it's like my friend Ishmael in South Africa who told me about the first time they could vote in South Africa when Nelson emerged non-bitter from prison. And it was such a miracle. Mm-hmm. And he said, we all thought we were going to be machine gunned at the polling places, but we were going to vote anyway. It's like, come on, Americans. They thought they were going to die. You just have to stand in line for 3 hours. Although that's a lot. But again, you know, it's the intention.
Well, you know that saying if voting could change anything, it would be illegal. Well,
yes, exactly.
That's what they're trying to. I mean, there's a young woman in Texas who's in jail for 5 years right now for voting, a young black woman.
Her name is
Crystal something. You know, it's horrific. So, yeah, at very least, plus, you know, all the ancestors of everyone from the suffragists to the civil rights movement who have given their lives trying to secure the right to vote are out there banging on the astral doors right now saying, like, do it. And there's some great candidates.
Yeah,
you know,
feel
there's
free.
Really great progressive candidates. There's wonderful candidates. I mean, I've never endorsed a candidate before, but there's a really wonderful woman, Pamela Harris, running for city council in Oakland, who's a dear personal friend of mine who's got fantastic progressive values. There's amazing people that actually are running, and it's really important that we support them and they do well.
Right, and it's also like, you know, the, I mean, Trump is a, you know, corrupt, monstrous, possessed by demons cipher. But the Bannon people, they are trained esotericists, right? I mean, in the power of symbol and story. And a lot of the progressive left, not you, darling, because you've been dedicated forever, but kind of abdicated, you know, spirituality, metaphor, story, you know, and the right wing hoovered it up to demonic purpose. So the power of story and metaphor and the summoning, like the in World War II, and in which England sponsored the witches and wizards. We don't believe in them, but we're sponsoring them to weave a spell of protection, you know, over England. And we go, it's kind of like that now. Use everything, but with flair and spice and irresistible invitation to a better story. Yeah.
And also, I guess for me, the final thing that's really important is learning the skills and the tools to create that better story and to actually the practical work of regeneration that comes through the permaculture teaching and the social permaculture, which we've been bringing into the permaculture movement, which is more looking at the ways we can design beneficial relationships.
Absolutely. So, democratic animism now. Cooperators are standing by. Anyway,
I'll just let people also know we've got a social permaculture intensive coming up at the beginning of December. We've got a 2-week-long permaculture training in January.
And your website is? Because we got to go.
Starhawk.org.
Excellent. I hope we coincide. We're always in cahoots. Thank you so much, Starhawk. That's really great. Thank you, Erica Bridgman.
Great talking to you.
Woof, woof, woof. On the board. I may see many of you at Open Secret tonight, possibly at 7:30, or Bioneers tomorrow at 9 p.m. That's really great. Democratic Animism Now. Thank you, team. We'll reconvene next week with more Starhawk, because we're just barely beginning. Woof, woof, woof.